As I mentioned at the very end of the previous lecture on early Christian psalmody and hymnody, it wasn't really until the 4th century that there was a kind of a sweeping enthusiasm for the Psalter. And what you have in this second set of materials, these texts on early monasticism, is a text which I will not read out, but allow you to read, but on which I'd like to comment very briefly. Notice that at the beginning in the introduction, there is a description and a reference to MacKinnon's work that reminds us that it was certainly by the end of the 4th century that the Psalter was regarded as the book par excellence for Christians to use in worship. In fact, that remains true that the Psalter is used more in the Christian tradition than even in the Jewish tradition. The Psalter is the hymnal of the temple. But since the fall of the temple, the use of the Psalter in the Jewish synagogue traditions and in private prayer among the Jewish people has not been as extensive as it is among the Christian faithful. The idea that you would pray the Psalter in a week has become the monastic norm, or in a month, as is now the norm in the four-volume Liturgy of the Hours, or every 2 weeks, as is supposed to happen for those who are bound to the Thesaurus, which regulates the liturgical practice of the monastic congregations, or as what some would regard as the extraordinary tradition of the Coptic Church, the Coptic monastic tradition, is to try to pray the Psalter every day. However one looks at that, that sense that the Psalms need to be prayed over and over again, that the praying of the whole of the Psalter as an expression of one's spiritual life is uniquely Christian. It is something which the monastic tradition has particularly emphasized, but which the Liturgy of the Hours, of course, in its Roman form as well, in its a more widely known form, has popularized, and it is a very specific Christian tradition of worship. Toward the second paragraph of this text, there's emphasis on the fact that psalmody is always interwoven with prayer, again, as we'll see with Cassian. A period for silent prayer after each psalm was the norm in the early tradition. It dropped out during the development of Gregorian chant, as we'll see, and silences in the middle of verses, that is to say, a long pause in the middle of a verse during the chanting of a psalm in the Gregorian tradition, began to displace the long pause at the end of each psalm. And certainly by the early Middle Ages, probably much earlier than that, perhaps a century or two after the death of Saint Benedict, the practice of a silent pause after each psalm, which was the universal monastic norm in the early tradition, began to disappear. And so in our own day, it has to be admitted quite candidly that it has been more than 1,000 years since monks and nuns had a silent pause after each psalm. That's the restoration of a very ancient practice, but one which has not been used for a millennium or more. So be patient with communities if you're trying to reinstitute this. It's not an easy thing to do, and although there are very good reasons for doing it, it can quite legitimately be said that there is an older tradition of not having those pauses. So we need to understand the reasons for them so that we can both justify and experience the very beautiful spirituality that lies within and behind the tradition of having a silent pause after each psalm. If you drop down now to the picture of St. Antony the Great, and then below that, the two paragraphs that I would invite you to read on your own, which detail the fact that in the desert tradition, psalmody and prayer were so interwoven that often you will see monastic authors simply saying things about the prayers, or he or she prayed 50 or 100 prayers per day. Probably this refers to the prayers which we're about to see depicted in the story about Antony, the prayers that marked the interruption of the ongoing daily meditation on the Psalter, recitation or chanting, quiet chanting to the self of the Psalter during times of work. And that's what this first text about Antony is about, this text from the Sayings of the Desert Fathers, the first parallel English and Greek that you have in this subsection. It's a description of Antony tempted by Achidia, by this this sense of dislike for holy practices, a sense of either agitated or of depressed listlessness. Achidia can take either form. He prays for help to God, and God sends a vision. And what Antony sees is simply himself working at his work, making a rope, and then periodically standing up to pray, and then sitting back down to work. Now, what isn't said, and what is almost certainly understood in this story, is that while sitting at work, Antony is presumed to be reciting the scriptures, and especially to be chanting the Psalms, to be reciting the Psalter to himself. And so these intervals of standing up for prayer are punctuating, or as it were, interrupting the daily ongoing work of reciting the biblical text. And this is a beautiful reminder of the fact that that rhythm that the liturgy teaches us, a rhythm of speech and of silence, is something we can and should carry with us into our work, periodically interrupting what we can hope is the background rhythm of our periodically offered prayer to God, even if the work we do is work of the mind that doesn't allow for the leisure of reciting biblical texts. We can periodically punctuate it by offering the experience back to God and using a word or phrase from the scriptures as we do this. Dropping down again over the next couple of paragraphs is a reminder of the fact that psalmody in the early monastic tradition served the purpose of keeping the mind focused on God. In the earliest desert monastic tradition, there were 12 psalms at what we would call lauds or morning prayer. It was actually a vigil office. And then 12 psalms at vespers. And that was it for the liturgy of the hours. Prayer twice a day, consisting of 12 psalms each, with silent intervals for prayer after each psalm, and of course the readings proper to those offices. But during the rest of the day, it was presumed that the person would continue to meditate on the scriptures and continue to recite the Psalter to oneself. Now, this served the purpose of keeping the mind focused on God, of keeping thoughts away, of enabling the mind constantly to be aware of the divine presence, but it also served a much more, if you will, exalted purpose, a kind of a contemplative opening out to God. And this we begin to see in the next parallel text, which is taken from Antony's letter to Marcellinus, a very famous phrase in which, it's Athanasius' letter to Marcellinus. Athanasius says that for the one who chants psalms, these are, as it were, a mirror in which he perceives him or herself and the movements of his own soul. The Psalter is a mirror. It contains all the movements of which the human heart is capable. This is its glory, and this for us is its pain. There is in the Psalter everything a human being can experience, everything from the most exalted praise to the most frustrated, anger-filled cursing, and everything in between. And therefore, if after each psalm we can offer ourselves to God, that means that every human experience, every human feeling, every human way of thinking can also be brought into the presence of God. The Psalter, with its richness and its pain, is an invitation and an obligation to bring all of those things, all of those experiences, into the presence of God, just as we do during the silent interval that follows each psalm. And dropping down, there's a text about the compunction that the psalmody can introduce. The Psalter is the soul's great teacher. And again, this is a reminder of the fact that in this early monastic tradition to which Athanasius is bearing witness, remembering that Athanasius is the great biographer of Antony, there is a sense that the Psalter can be a window into both the world. It's explaining to us creation history and God's presence in the past, but it's also a mirror into the self. Within us, feelings arise, images come up, and the Psalter provides us with an opportunity to offer these things back to God, both with the words of the Psalms and especially during the silent interval for prayer that follows each psalm, and about which we'll see more in the texts from John Cashin.